We're going to go on to case number 2, which is James versus the Hyatt Regency. It's case number 12-15-11. And Mr. Longo, hi, how are you? Come on up.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Restore first, ask second. The Congress passed the FMLA so that employees wouldn't be afraid of taking days off because of a serious illness. Here we have Hyatt placing employees in a position of being fearful. Hyatt violated the FMLA on day one, April 24th, when Hyatt did not restore Mr. James, who's legally blind, to his job.
May I just ask you this very quickly? Did Mr. James actually attempt to explain to anyone at Hyatt that he wanted to come back before the expiration of his FMLA leave?
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question, but repeatedly he went back and said, I want to come back to work. I'll do anything to come back to work. He brought back a doctor's release on April 24th, another doctor's statement on May 11th, another doctor's...
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to get to is, are we to assume from the submission of the doctor's notes that Mr. James was explicitly requesting to come back to work?
Yes, because I believe he told Ms. Perez that I want to come back to work. And she said, you can't. And I think he asked why. And she said, could you have a restriction? And that's a restriction that would be impossible for him to remove because he was born legally blind. So, yes. He called her regularly. For 10 months. I don't know what more this man could have done. And he's a shy type. So he was, as his, the testimony I presented to you, that he was shocked that she kept rejecting him. He didn't know what to say. He felt depressed. I believe I submitted that testimony to you.
See, what I'm trying to figure out is how a jury could infer that he was willing and able to return to work before the 12-week FMLA period had lapsed, when he was simultaneously submitting these disability forms.
But it wasn't simultaneous in the sense that he brought a note, a doctor's release on April 24th, to go back to work. Hyatt rejected that. So it was after that, after Hyatt had given him the disability forms, after that did he have those completed. So it wasn't simultaneous. Had Hyatt complied with the law on April 24th, we wouldn't be here. And there would have been no disability forms. It makes no sense for someone to say, I want to come back to work, I'm bringing you all of these doctor releases, and say at the same time, I don't want to work.
But here's the bottom line problem for me at any rate. What can you point to in the record showing that he attempted to engage in the interactive process or that he requested an accommodation from Hyatt? In other words, are the doctor's notes themselves the only evidence?
In the record, I believe Mr. Perez indicated in his deposition that I asked Ms. Perez, why can't I come back to work? So that is saying, I want to come to work. And she's saying, you have a restriction, so you can't come back. So, if you want to come back to work, that's what you would say. I don't know if the law requires such a high amount of effort by an employee. My understanding of FMLA is that if you have a doctor's note, releases you to return to work, Hyatt has a duty to restore and then ask questions after restoring the employee. And I believe this court indicated that in Harnell versus Postal Service, 415 F3rd 700, 2005. So by not restoring him, Hyatt violated the law. If they had questions, they should have restored him and then asked the questions. But they never did. So they never engage in the interactive process.
I mean, your claim is very unusual in that it's undisputed that Hyatt worked with him to allow him the full guaranteed 12 weeks of FMLA leave.
But he didn't want it. He wanted to come back to work. So that's why it's unusual. Hyatt would not let him come back.
But he wants to come back to work, but at the same time he's bringing in these doctor's notes that say he can't come back to work.
And those doctor's notes, though, we don't know. Hyatt never presented evidence what the disability definition is for the union carrier, Hyatt's own disability carrier. And I might add, we presented an affidavit to Your Honor that Hyatt's own disability carrier indicated that Hyatt refused to accommodate Mr. James repeatedly. It's in her affidavit. It's in her notes. So this man wanted to come back to work.
Is it that they refused to accommodate his visual impairment? Is it?
That's what's unusual. None of the depositions that Hyatt presents, none of the depositions indicate why they refused to return him to work. The deposition testimony is he had a restriction, and therefore he can't come back pursuant to our policy. So we have to assume it was because his restriction of legal blindness, which he had for the 22 years he worked there.
So how would Hyatt know that? I mean, that had never been on any of his performance evaluations. That is, his vision never was mentioned, and it did not limit his ability to perform his work up to that point.
That's correct.
So how would Hyatt know that this was a something that they should address if it had never been a problem before?
Well, it had been a problem in the sense it was resolved. He needed accommodations such as enlarged print for duties, enlarged print for work schedule. The time clock was adjusted. He had told his supervisors over the years. So it wasn't a problem because they did accommodate him for that. And remember, his duties are washing pots and pans. So it's not like it required an extreme amount of vision.
What evidence do you have other than your own testimony that the position doesn't require heavy lifting or bending over? In other words, is there evidence in the record one way or another as to how heavy the pots and pans Mr. James washed were?
No, and Hyatt never presented any. And
well, aren't you supposed to?
I don't think so, because it was not an essential job function.
Is his job.
No, it's for pots and pans. Pots and pans are not. I mean, what does heavy mean? And that only comes up on September 25, 2007. Hyatt had already violated the FMLA for a few months, not to mention the ADA. Do you see what I'm saying?
Not really, but keep going.
Okay. So Hyatt had already violated the FMLA by not bringing him back to work on April 24th, May 10th, July 11th, August 2nd, when the doctor gave a full release saying he can go back to full duty. But because Hyatt refused, Mr. James went to another doctor seeking some type of work release. And that doctor just said no heavy lifting or excessive bending, which Mr. James said he wasn't part of his duties anyway. So, and there's no evidence from Hyatt that it was. Hyatt refers to a job description. Where is the deposition evidence saying that, you know, we didn't bring him back to work? I have a white light. I'm not sure if...
It means that you're into your rebuttal time.
Okay, well, does Your Honor want me to continue? Or?
Well...
You can use your rebuttal time anytime you want.
You can do whatever you wish.
Okay. May I come back then? All right, thank you.
Mr. Kongyu? Did I pronounce that?
Me too.
Close.
Kongyu?
Yes. May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Michael Kongyu. I represent the defendant appellee in this matter, Hyatt Regency Chicago. This is a case that arises from a leave of absence that plaintiff started in 2007. Since February 2008, he's been back from that leave of absence, and he has been back at work without issue.
Well, let me just say this. Your brief cites the deposition testimony of two supervisors and the written job description for your claim that he couldn't perform the essential functions of the job. But the citation that you provided didn't contain the written job description.
I think it did, Judge. It's actually Deposition Exhibit 21 to Jerome Cook's deposition, where he testified that the written job description indeed did contain Mr. James as the plaintiff's essential duties. So we did actually contain.
Could you point me to the page in the appendix that contains the written job description?
I don't know if we contain, if we included. We did not include that
job description
in the appendix. Correct. It's part of the record on summary judgment. It was included as part of our appendix at the district court, Judge.
So how can we know what the job description is without spending days looking for it?
Well, it's identified rather specifically in the district court pleadings on summary judgment, and it's also identified through the deposition testimony of Mr. Cook, who was one of his supervisors, and it's also...
Do you have it here? Would you like to tell us what the job description is?
I don't have a copy with me at the podium today. I may have one at my desk, but I can't tell this court, based on my knowledge of that job description, that it does indeed contain at least an indication that one of the essential functions of Mr. James' position was that he engaged in excessive bending over. And that's exactly what Mr. Bozeman, in addition to Mr. Cook, his other supervisor, indicated in his deposition, was one of his essential functions. Mr. Bozeman, who was one of his supervisors, testified very specifically on this point. Plaintiff's counsel asked him what are his job functions, and Mr. Bozeman said that, quote, most of Mr. James's, the plaintiff's, job functions included, quote, heavy lifting and, quote, excessive bending over. Under that testimony, in combination with the testimony of Mr. Cook and the job description, we believe we've established that he was incapable of performing the essential functions of a physician. And that's in addition, I might add, to the medical opinions of two of his treating physicians. Now, not incidentally, who have been identified as experts by plaintiff's counsel in the litigation below at the district court. To get to one of the points that you made, Judge Rovner, in Mr. Longo's presentation, there simply is nothing in the record that indicates that Mr. James could have returned to work within the 12 weeks of FMLA that he was granted, and he got the maximum amount that he's entitled to under that statute. The only release, and I don't want to get into the minutiae of the various facts that Mr. Longo presented, but the only release truly that can be considered a release that was issued before his 12 weeks of FMLA expired was issued on April 24th by Dr. Scott, who was plaintiff's primary treating physician, and indicated only that he was eligible to return to nonspecific light duty. Now, the very next day, he requested FMLA leave, and then very shortly thereafter, Dr. Scott, the exact same physician, indicated that he was incapable of working in any capacity at all. And the reputation, those representations continued after that, during his 12 weeks of FMLA, and then thereafter. Under those circumstances, there simply is no duty for Hyatt to reinstate an employee under the FMLA, and as a result, his FMLA interference claim cannot move forward. With respect to his FMLA retaliation claim, the district court here correctly dismissed this claim. Plaintiff has admitted that everyone treated him fairly through the FMLA application process. So there is no smoking gun. Likewise, there is no convincing mosaic of circumstantial evidence, which is also talked about in this context.
In the brief, you referred to critical tasks that he couldn't perform, and he identified lifting a garbage can as the only potentially problematic job requirement. What would the other critical tasks be that he couldn't perform?
Well, it would be any task that required him to engage in heavy lifting or excessive bending over. Now, plaintiffs...
Do we know how heavy those pots and pans are?
As a matter of fact, the pots and pans, no, but that's simply one piece of plaintiff's job responsibilities.
Garbage cans?
I don't know, as a matter of fact. We've got plaintiff's testimony that he was required to lift the garbage can. My understanding of his position was that he was required to clean, to transport food from point A to point B in the hotel. That would be one piece of what he was required to do, lifting glasses and the like, sweeping, mopping, all of those types of things. But to get back to plaintiff's FMLA retaliation claim, Judge Rovner, plaintiff has not also established that he can move forward under the direct method by establishing some sort of a convincing mosaic.
Is a district minute. On page 19 of the appendix 32, I'm quoting from the judge's opinion. According to essential functions of his position, according to James' supervisors and Hyatt's 2006 written job description. So there must have been a job description that the district court had.
There was, and that was the point that I was making to Judge Rover.
Why did you give us the same gifts that you give them?
I apologize, Judge. In retrospect, in hindsight, it's 2020. I certainly should have included that job description as part of our appendix.
Everyone learned something today.
It certainly was included, and there was a specific cite to that in the record of the district court. He hasn't established a convincing mosaic because, as the district court correctly acknowledged, it just simply makes no sense for the same people to have that offered and granted him FMLA leave to simply retaliate against him almost immediately after they've granted and offered him that same leave. Under the indirect method, his claim also fails. Plaintiff has admittedly failed to establish a prima facie case, and despite that, continues to assert, incorrectly, but continues to assert that he need not in order to move forward on that claim. Even if you want to entertain that argument, and it's an incorrect argument, but even if you want to entertain it, the claim still fails on pretext for the same reasons that he can't proceed with his FMLA retaliation claim under the direct method. It simply makes no sense that the exact same people that granted him this right under the FMLA would have thereafter immediately retaliated against him for exercising the exact same right that they had offered and granted to him.
How difficult, I'm taking you somewhere else, forgive me, but
fine.
How difficult would it have been for Hyatt to produce the records of FMLA leave which James asked for?
Inordinately difficult, and that was the subject of extensive meet and confer sessions with plaintiff's counsel on this issue, and it's also a subject that was briefed repeatedly at the district court level. Specifically, what plaintiff's counsel was asking for in this case was literally every shred of information relating to every single employee who took any leave of absence, medical or otherwise, for 8 years at the Hyatt Regency Chicago. As we told plaintiff's counsel during our meet and confer sessions in an attempt to avoid a motion to compel, and as we told the district court in response to the two motions to compel on this issue, that amounted to 2,400 leaves of absence and information related to 2,400 leaves of absence. Now, we don't believe that Hyatt would have had an obligation under the federal rules of discovery to provide that information. The district court agreed with us not once but twice and actually sanctioned plaintiff counsel as a result of that discovery abuse, as well as other discovery abuses that were part of the record on that issue. Now, so to answer your question specifically, it would have been very difficult to turn over that information. That's not something that we believe we were obligated to provide. With respect to plaintiff's ADA claims, I want to respond to one of the comments that Judge Randa, you made in Mr. Longo's presentation as to whether anyone at Hyatt had actually any knowledge as to whether plaintiff was legally blind or otherwise impaired in some way. The testimony and the evidence on this issue is critical. There simply is no evidence in the record that anyone, any of the people that purportedly left plaintiff on leave too long, which is really the premise that underlines all of his claims, there's no evidence that any of these people ever viewed plaintiff as limited in any significant way, visual or otherwise, let alone know that he has legal blindness, which is a condition that plaintiff claims to have. Under those circumstances, he simply can't move forward with his ADA claims as a matter of law.
Is Hyatt's decision to place him on disability evidence that Hyatt regarded him as disabled, or do you think that's unrelated?
I think it's unrelated, but to answer your question perhaps more specifically, this is one of the key points in the record. There's no evidence that Hyatt ever affirmatively gave these documents, these benefit packets, so that Mr. James, the plaintiff, could obtain these benefits. We didn't offer, nor did we even suggest that he take them, but he took them, and he continued to take them. Now, to make the jump that simply putting someone on a long-term leave or providing them with short-term disability benefits that the company offers as one of the benefits to his employees, I think is a bridge too far under the ADA. If you were to make that leap, any company that's got a short-term disability policy would thereafter become under the umbrella of the ADA if someone took those STD benefits that were available to them. That's not a bridge that I think that's a bridge too far under the ADA, and it's not something that would support plaintiff's ADA claims in this particular case. To address plaintiff's failure to accommodate claim for a moment, the district court correctly determined here that there simply was no duty at Hyatt to accommodate the plaintiff because he could not perform the essential functions of his position. We've gone at this to some degree already today, but you've got the testimony of two of his supervisors, and you've also got the written job description, and you've also got the medical opinions of two of his doctors who've been identified as experts in this case. Under those particular circumstances, Hyatt did not have a duty to accommodate in this instance. Now, I recognize that there's other aspects of plaintiff's appeal. Perhaps most significantly, plaintiff is appealing several discovery orders that were issued at the district court. If there's no specific questions or any questions at all on that portion of plaintiff's appeal or any other questions, we'll choose to stand on our brief and on the record.
Thank you so much. Okay, Mr. Longo, you have how many minutes left? You have 6 minutes left.
Your Honor, counsel indicated that Bozeman had testified it this way and that way, but that presupposes they were involved in the decision to reject Mr. James. They weren't. Counsel, a defendant points to no evidence that they were involved.
But they are supervisors.
They are supervisors. And if we look at the deposition testimony, Bozeman was just asked, what's heavy? I think he said anything over 40 or 50 pounds. I believe I asked him, was there any time that he could not perform that duty? I believe Mr. Bozeman testified, no, he could always perform that duty. And as far as the job description, Mr. James testified that job description applied to daytime stewards, not nighttime. But where is the deposition evidence? Perez, she testified that the reason she rejected Mr. James is because he had a restriction. There's the evidence. She made the decision along with the assistant HR director. There's the evidence. There is no deposition evidence that they looked at disability forms or they considered the essential job functions. In fact, we point out the evidence shows Hyatt has no policy to even consider essential job functions, no policy to guarantee employees the right to come back to work. That's a direct violation of the FMLA. But even if we put the FMLA aside under the ADA, he is disabled. Hyatt should have engaged in the interactive process with him. They knew he had worked there for 22 years, but they rejected him for 10 months. And what changed in those 10 months? Why did they suddenly allow him to come back to work? The defendant indicates they got clarification. I asked in my briefs, what clarification? What was the question? Where's the deposition evidence that they had needed clarification?
Well, but something had changed. He had a retinal detachment.
That was way back in, but I'm talking about what changed in January of 2008 for them to stop prohibiting him from returning to work. Nothing. Hyatt received the same information in January 2008 as they had received on May 10th, July 11th, August 2nd, etc. Nothing had changed. As far as the logs, the FMLA logs, we asked that Hyatt come forward with FMLA logs. All the FMLA information is computerized. So we thought if we look at these logs, we can then determine what personnel files we would need. It's all computerized. That's something that could have been done, so we could have met our burden for similarly situated. This court in Brunker indicated the defendant cannot, on one hand, argue that plaintiff has not presented similarly situated evidence, and on the other hand, argue we're not going to give it to him. And on the issue of sanctions, I think one thing the court didn't look at is that sanctions should not be given if there are other reasons, circumstances that make them unjust. The district court wouldn't even look at the affidavit of indigency of Mr. James. In fact, the district court rejected it even when we filed a motion to proceed.
But the district court transferred those sanctions to you.
Yes, he did, many months later, with no notice. Never had a meaningful opportunity to present substantial justification. Requested to do that when a motion to reconsider. I was told, you cannot, I'm using my words strongly, you cannot file anything. We never had a meaningful opportunity. People can disagree. Hyde didn't ask for sanctions. I mean, we may disagree on Hyde and I on the scope, but not on the appropriateness. But more important, I think Hyde has no policies, getting back to the ADA, to consider accommodations, no policies to discuss what a disabled person needs. Hyatt admits they did not engage in the interactive process until January 2008. That's 9 months later. Who admitted that? The personnel manager, who's a lawyer. Hyatt should have been engaging in the interactive process months and months sooner. Months sooner. And I think the disability forms, in one respect, is a red herring. Why? Because Hyatt violated the law on day one. Had they restored him to come back to work on April 24th, the evidence is Perez would not have given him disability forms.
Even though they're getting these notes,
but why is the question?
Doctors saying.
But why? Why were they getting them? Because they had rejected him. They gave him a packet to complete the disability packet. That's why. So, if anything, it presents a material disputed fact for the jury to decide. The jury would have to sort this out and say, well, why on one hand do we have notes saying he can't work? On the other hand, we have notes saying he can work. I don't think that's something that can be resolved on summary judgment. This man wanted to work. I don't know what else he could have done. And the fact that Hyatt has no policies to restore somebody to work or to ask about essential job functions, I think is something that is key. I think another thing as far as retaliation, Hyatt had hired two, I'm sorry, I have this hearing thing.
Don't you worry.
Oh, thank you. Hyatt hired two new stewards in May of 2007. Coincidentally, the very same time that they were rejecting Mr. James from coming back into work. Did that have a play in this? It's for the jury to decide. As far as our discovery, I don't believe Hyatt has ever demonstrated that it doesn't meet the substantial justification standard, and nor should they have to. I'm not suggesting that they did. What I'm saying is they never asked for sanctions. But our discovery is based upon case law. It's based upon case law. And if we can't bring disagreements to the district court, well, who can we bring them to? I don't think we should fear being sanctioned. Maybe the district court would disagree and... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both parties, and the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.